grave marker, wooden grave marker, and a stone tombstone. Techniques used on those two items can be applied to a lot of other applications, and we'll go through that as I talk. But one of the reasons, like, why would you use styrofoam? It's cheap, it's light, it's relatively safe, it's usually non-flammable, it is combustible, so if you're doing a professional haunt, you may want to deal with a fire marshal. Some fire marshals are okay with it, other fire marshals, you know, has to be coated and everything. It's easily available. Like, what we're using is polystyrene, which is usually referred to as styrofoam, and it's insulation styrofoam, the kind that you would buy at Home Depot or Lowe's. There's two types. There is expanded polystyrene, which is the white type that has the little pebbles. It's not as dense, at about two-thirds of the price of extruded polystyrene, which is either blue or pink. And blue and pink, there's no difference in quality. One is made by Dow, the other is made by Owen Corning. They both come in various densities, but blue and pink are identical. They're both extruded polystyrene. A lot of people say the pink is better than blue, or blue is better than pink. They're the same. The extruded polystyrene paints better and cuts smoother. So if you want a painted surface, which is most of what your haunts are going to have, the polystyrene, the extruded polystyrene will work better. Styrofoam can be painted directly. It does not have to be primed or coated. You just have to make sure you're using a water-based paint. Any kind of craft paint or house paint would be adequate for painting styrofoam. You can coat it with hard coats to give it a hard shell, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. One of the biggest questions is, how do you cut big pieces of styrofoam? One thing I've used a lot to do with is, you're all familiar with T-squares, sheetrock squares, okay. T-square is a nice handy tool, relatively size, but usually has a plastic blade. Okay. Sheetrock square, usually metal. What I've done was take a sheetrock square, and the foam that I'm usually dealing with is 2 foot by 8 foot. So I cut a sheetrock square down to a very handy size to handle a 2 foot piece. So I'm not dealing with a 4 foot or 8 foot sheetrock square. And if I want to cut with a hand tool, I'll usually use a sculpting tool, and I can just take a sheetrock square and lay it across the edge, and with the hand tool, running it right across the metal blade. So I can hold a hand tool against that metal blade and get an adequate cut. Okay. So if I'm doing one long piece and I only need to do one or two cuts, that's an easy way of doing it. Okay. Another way, and the way I did it with the blanks that I'm using, I took the sheetrock square, scored a line, and to cut that line, used a bow cutter. And the bow cutter is nothing more than a big hot wire tool. Now, this is the 2 foot bow cutter, and there's a 4 foot version, but I could do a 2 foot cut in one pass. And what I would usually do is hold a piece of styrofoam.
You need a hand?
You know, what I'd usually want to do is hold it over the edge of a table. I get the wire out of the way. And I'll just line the wire up with the line I scored. And holding over the edge of the table, it's going to be flat. And I'll just let gravity of the wire cutter cut. So if you're holding it on a flat surface, gravity will drop it straight. And I'm not sure how straight this is going to be holding the styrofoam, but I'll get a nice clean 2 foot or a 4 foot cut. So I cut the blanks using the bow cutter. And if you're going to do a lot of cutting, It's a very fast, easy way of doing it. Okay, having a blank cut, we're going to do the wooden styrofoam or wooden grade marker first. I have a blank, and what I want to do is cut an arch over the top. Just a simple arch. Now, normally, you're familiar with using a compass, and a compass has about a 6-inch maximum radius. Okay, if you want to do anything bigger, you take the carpenter's approach, and a nail and a pencil and a piece of string, and you go around. Except that when I go around, my two ends never meet. And they never do. So what I did, if I wanted to do big pieces, I took a wooden yardstick, and I drilled a hole at every half inch on that wooden yardstick. And I used a skewer as my pivot point, and a marker at with certain one of the holes. And I can go back and forth all day long, and I'm just going to go right back over the line I drew. But it's not going to move. This is a small version of that. I just cut this down and marked this for 13 inches. But what I'm going to do, put my glasses on. Using my skewer, I found the center point, the center line on the back side of my tombstone. And then I marked the point where I want my pivot for my arch. And I'm just going to draw that arch. And I'm being interrupted by stuff in the way. I'm just going back. And I can go back and forth all day long. And I'm going to get that same arch. Okay?
How far apart are the holes on the stick? Quarter inch?
Pardon me?
How far apart are the holes on the stick?
I did it half inch. Yeah, I mean, I drew the holes large enough for the marker to fit in and spaced them half inch apart. Now, I'm using the sculpting tool as a cutter. And the sculpting tool is a flexible wire. I'm holding it taut so that the wire does not move. And just get rid of some of the excess. Again, I would normally try and hold this flat on a table so I have less movement in my hand cutting it, but it's a little bit hard here and still trying to show you. Okay, I have my arch, my tombstone. Now I want this to be wood slats, so now I want to draw boards on there. It's going to be made up of three boards. So again, using an engraving tool. An engraving tool is nothing but a blunt tip, and it's the tip that's going to be doing the burning. It's not really a cutting tool, per se. It's just going to engrave. And I'm using a sled guide. And the purpose of the sled guide is so you can control, in this case, using with the engraving tool, I control depth of cut. So the entire cutted surface will have the same depth. Way too deep.
What is that called again, that guide?
Sled guide. keep it off. Now just go follow that line. Now, I stopped before I got to the end because I didn't want the sled guide to fall off the end, and then again I'll lose control of my depth. So I'll just turn it around and come in from the other side.
No hazard to your health, the melting plastic.
Pardon me?
No hazard smelling.
The toxicity of using polystyrene is about as dangerous as burning a candle on your dining room table. If you look at the data sheets, go to either Dow or Owen Corning's website and get the manufacturer's data sheets. Most of the precautions are concerning dust. You do not want to use polystyrene with a saw, wraps, file, anything that will do a dust. Polystyrene is about 97% air. So what's coming off, what you think of as fumes, is actually air escaping. The 3% remaining is mostly a polychemical. And when that burns, or if it's shaved, it's a solid particle. So if you're sanding it or using a file, you're creating a solid particle dust. And that's not going to go anywhere if you breathe it. It's never going to evaporate. Never going to dissipate. You know, it's just going to stay there. So if you ever do use a file or sandpaper on styrofoam, make sure you're using a good respirator. Otherwise, if you're using hot wire tools, you want to be in a ventilated area. Okay. So I have my slats cut. I have what's going to be three boards. Now I want to do a wood graining. And I'm using three power supplies because I don't want some of the tools take a little while to heat up. And I don't want you to suffer through the impatience of waiting for a tool to get hot. To do wood graining, if you want to do knots in the wood, start there first. Do your knot first. And the way I do it easily is I'll just take the tip and turn the temperature down so it's just hot enough to break the surface. And just take the tip of the knife and tap in a circular motion. That would be the core of your knot. And you're just creating some type of irregular pattern in there. Which you see there. Now, starting again from the knot, take the tip of the knife again and just drag it going around your knot and creating your grain. And if it's natural wood, no grain is going to be perfectly symmetrical in line. Spacing is going to be very irregular. So just follow wherever the tip of your knife is taking you. If you try to do it too perfectly, it's not going to look natural at all. Okay, now, as you're doing this, you may find that some of your graining is going on an angle and you're going off the side. If you're going off the side, that's fine. But remember to finish the sides and finish the top. You have graining that comes up to the top. So just take your knife and go across wherever those grain lines are to continue that graining on the top and sides. So you have finished on the edges also. Okay. You want to go back and finish the knot. That's part of that core. And just doing like a V on each side of that knot. And then repeat that for the other boards. Now, to do lettering, I have a hard time drawing freehand. I can't draw at all, period. So, let alone freehand. But what I've done is I use clip art, I use templates, I use anything I can trace, I use word processors, something that I could print out, blow up, and then copy. So in this case, I just took Rest in Peace, RIP, did that on a word processor. And I could pin that there. And depending on the styrofoam, how dense it is, and how much of an impression I could leave in it easily, I could either go across it, like with a tip of a skewer, and just trace that and leave an impression on the styrofoam. Okay? Sometimes you can't. Sometimes the styrofoam is not as dense as you would like it to be, and that impression that you're trying to leave just bounces back and doesn't leave anything. Another technique is to just take a pin and go around the outline of that and basically leave an impression of holes all right around the outline. All I'm doing is just poking a hole around the perimeter of the letter. I'm saying yes, I don't have any problem. Okay, now if the impressions are good enough to start engraving, that's fine. If they're not, and they're not really, if they're hard to see, just take a magic marker and connect the dots. So, I have a series of dots that I poked through the paper that I pinned on, and then connected those dots so I could see them more easily. Take the engraving tool. And then carve out that letter. You just work the tool back and forth to remove any of the pieces in between.
And what setting do you have that particular tool on? Is it high or?
This is on high.
a sheet of that pink stuff?
Pardon me?
How much is one sheet of that pink stuff?
In the Maryland area where I live, it's about $13 for 2 foot by 8 foot by 2 inch. Okay, I cut out that ladder. Now there's a lot of stubble in there. You just take a knife or a screwdriver and work that out. That's just like the residual polystyrene. That's 3%. that is. The rest of it was all air. Okay? Just do that again for the rest of your laddering. Now, you can enhance that some more. If I want to do, say, a cross in there, these are something I just picked up at Michael's, the wooden type crosses. Again, use them as a template. Trace that on, and then carve that out. So there's a lot of things that you use as a template if you were artistically challenged. One thing about corners is that they do not lack creativity, so that's easy. Now to enhance this some more.
Is the bit replaceable in there?
Pardon me?
Is the bit replaceable in there?
Not on the engraver and the knives. That's a one-piece tool. But on the wire tools like the Sculptor and the freehand router, they are replaceable.
What's the life on the?
These are the old style tools that are about 10 years old.
Okay,
what we're selling downstairs are new tools that have the ergonomic handles. These tools are about 10 years old. Yeah, that's just a single, it's just an engraving tool. There's other ways of carving that out if you're doing large areas. There's a tool called the freehand router that you can shape the wire and actually shave out large pieces. Okay, now if I want to add wormholes to this, I just take the engraver, bury it in, and then pull it out. Pull it out on an angle. And I got wormholes that I've added. Take the Sculptor again, and I want to put some, I mean, this is supposed to be an old tombstone, probably from the 1800s, so it's worn, it's got chips in it. So I just take the sculpting tool and cut out some chips. Chip out the sides. And you see the effects you're going to start getting. Okay, that's pretty much the sculpting part of it. Now what you're going to do is paint this. And we're going to take a black paint or whatever color you want the grout lines or the grain lines and background to be. I normally use black because it's a good contrast. You use different shades of brown. Paint the entire surface. What you want to do is paint all the cut lines. Every place that's been cut that you want to show through, make sure you get paint in that. So if you're doing wood grain, for all intents and purposes, you're painting the entire surface because you have that graining effect on the entire surface. So you want to get it into the wormholes, you want to get it into the knot, all the graining, and into all the lettering. That's going to be your background color. And what you wind up with is something like this. Okay, I have three slats cut as wood graining. I have RIP, I have a cross up here. Okay? Now this is ready for a second coat of paint. And when I put the second coat of paint on, are you familiar with a dry brush technique of painting? Okay, everybody? Okay. Well, you're using a very light coat of paint, just skimming the surface. And if you dry brush on top of this, the black that's in the cut lines will not get paint, hopefully, if you did dry brushing correctly. And those lines will show through.
Brushes or sponge or
I use what works for me at that time. Okay, I've used foam brushes. I use a lot. I use dental brushes.
Do you seem to find like the first layer is easier to do with like a brush because it has the, you know, the bristles and everything, and then the foam for the drying?
I'm sorry?
Do you switch between the two on the same tombstone, like the first layer being a brush?
Okay, normally I try to paint fast enough, because especially if I'm doing stone, not so much with wood, but with stone, because I'll put a layer down, and before that layer is dry, I try to go over with another layer. And the reason why, if you're using multicolors and you let layers dry, okay, then it's going to look like a layer of color on top of a layer of color. Okay, where if you do it while the bottom layer is still wet and tacky, the top layer of color kind of blends in with it, and the two colors meld instead of look like layers. And I think it gives you a more realistic look. But I'll use the sponge brushes, I'll use a sponge, I'll use stencil brushes, whatever will give you the effect I'm trying to achieve at that time. And I'll play with a lot of scrap first. Okay? Or sometimes I redo a lot of things. Now, in this case, I'm going to use two shades of brown. But they're not going to be layered, they're going to be side by side to show that there's different kinds of wood being used, or different sources of that wood. And they're not very different shades of brown. Now again, this works a lot easier if you have the piece that you're working on laid on a table. See that?
Yes.
That was kind of rushed, but close.
And that's the water-based paint we're using there?
That's a water-based paint. This is house paint. Exterior or interior latex paint. Now take another shade of brown. Exterior paint. Styrofoam outside, the only thing that really affects it is UV light. And what UV light does to styrofoam is make it brittle. So if you bump into it after it's been outside, it'll just crack on you. But if it's painted, and if it's painted with any kind of half-decent exterior paint, most exterior paints have a UV inhibitor. So yeah, you're going to be okay with any kind of exterior paint. Okay. See the contrast you get? And you know, your wood graining showing through, your wormholes are showing through, your lettering, and your cross are obviously showing through. And I'm not going to go through and do the other slab. But you want to make sure you do the sides because you have wood graining going around the edges. It's up in here. We have a cutout. That's all part of your detailing.
That stone will be finished at that point?
Pardon me?
That stone is finished now?
That's finished. I mean, if I want to do anything more to it, I could with a polyurethane, use a water-based polyurethane. You can get a spray polyurethane. That'll protect the paint a little bit. You just mentioned something that just, what you don't want is something that looks like it was just freshly painted. Okay, if you can age it with shading, that's good. There's a product called Design Master. And if anybody's done any kind of floral work, it's a spray tint that's used for tinting silk flowers. Okay? It's not a paint. If you're spraying it at a distance, it just puts a mist over whatever you're coloring. So if you, this is black. Black is hard to find because you don't see very many black flowers. But if Michael's, AC Moore, any kind of craft shops that have floral supplies carry Design Master. But if you're spraying this, I can spray this with a black and age that. And I got an example of that later to show you. So it doesn't have that fresh painted look. You know, if it's supposed to be 150 years old, it should look like it's freshly painted. Okay, now, that's a wooden tombstone, and there's more involved in doing a wooden tombstone than doing a stone one, because of all the wood grading effect. If we wanted to do a stone tombstone, a lot of the techniques stay the same. I'm going to draw an arch. In this case, instead of drawing an arch end to end, I drew a parallel line, perpendicular line to my center line, and I'm going to cut that arch, okay, so I have a shoulder in there. A lot of different ways you can cut it. But the same technique, I just used my compass, drew my arch. Pardon me?
Are you pushing the arms apart on the tool when you cut that?
I'm sorry.
He's causing tension, yes.
You're pushing the arms apart.
Yeah. I was holding that taut. That wire tends to want to be, once it turns to a bow. If you squeeze the arms together, it naturally wants to flex to a bow. So I'm just holding it taut. Okay. So I got my basic black of my tombstone. I'm going to do the same thing for lettering. Same lettering, different size font. I use it bold because it's going to be wider on a wider tombstone. I did the same thing. Pinned it on, made an impression, and then cut it out. But instead of cutting out the letters, I did a reverse cut. I cut out around the letters, leaving the letters raised. Same technique, different application. Okay, I did the engraving, but I left the letters intact instead of removing the letter. Okay. And did the same thing, adding a cross at the top. I traced the cross on there and cut around that. So what I wound up with Well, before I get that far, if I had this lettered, embellished with any kind of symbolism on there, I could go ahead and do chip outs. And that's just holding the wire loosely and letting it move. And then you're going to get variations in that cut. That cut will not be a smooth, flat cut. I just go around. Now, I have chips in there. I want to add cracks in there. I take the engraving tool, and I just drag a line. And add marble and stone crack. It's not very seldom a very straight line. You get the effects of cracks in your stone. Now, you're doing stone, so you don't have to paint the entire surface. You just want to paint the areas that you cut. So in this case, the rest in peace is raised. I cut out around it instead. I did it with the engraving tool. Same technique, but instead of cutting the letters, I cut out around it so that the letters stand out. The cross is cut out. Instead of cutting out the entire cross, I just cut the perimeter of it. The cracks and chips are painted so that they get highlighted. Now, again, this is ready for a second coat of paint. Everything that's black, that was intended to be black, will show through. Some of it will, not all of them. Some of them will actually give off a gas. So you really have to be careful. It'll use the, it'll, polystyrene, the white, pink, or blue. It'll also do the type of foam that comes in packaging. Like if you have collectible type objects and that foam packing that's around it, it'll cut that. Don't want to use it on the expandable foam, like the kind that's in a can. Great stuff. That you spray and it expands. That has a combustibility level of about 120 degrees that could ignite, you know, if it's not completely cured and you try to cut it with a foam cutter. You don't want to use it with floral foam. Some of the floral foams will give off a gas. If you stay with insulation foam, you're safe. Well, if you know it's polystyrene, like some of the stuff like your computers and TVs come packed in are polystyrene, okay, you could use that. If you live near a marina, a lot of your boats that are sold at a marina, they're delivered almost totally packed in foam. I mean, you can get foam like 8 inches thick. And if you live near a marina and have that option of going there and getting foam, they'll love you. Because they fill up containers of that and pay somebody to come take it away.
When you cut out that rest in peace, do you get that texture inside of there naturally, or do you have to do something to that to get that rugged?
Because I was using the engraving tool, and that's just a real small stubby tool, you're going to get that pitted look.
Okay.
And I left it there because it looks like it's a chiseled look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But if you don't want that, you can smooth that out. You can take foam coat, joint compound, spackling paste, mix it with water so it's real thin, and brush it in there, and it'll smooth that out if you want it smooth.
Oh, no way. It looks good like that.
Okay. Now this is ready to start painting. I'm not sure what I want to do yet. I'm using three shades of gray probably. Or two shades of gray and a shade of black.
Shade of black?
Pardon me?
Shade of black, black,
black. No, black's not black. Go to the paint shop and see how many shades of black there are. Like white.
It looks like you're starting with the medium shade of the three that you have there.
Pardon?
It looks like you're starting with the medium of the three colors.
Yes.
You have one lighter and one
yes.
darker.
Yeah.
Is that
generally... for any reason for that? No.
When you're carving a stone effect, do you ever hit it with acetone to give it a weathered look?
Yes. In fact, if you use a spray paint, a solvent spray paint, do the same thing. Anything with a solvent will eat up styrofoam.
Would you apply that if you're using a spray paint as the last coat or the first coat?
If you use spray paint, any coat. In fact, there's a product called Flexstone that has a stone-based type paint. The paint itself is fine. Okay. It has a sealer that comes with it. Sometimes it's a two-part package. The sealer has a solvent in it. The paint does not. You can paint something with Flexstone and then spray it with the sealer and watch your styrofoam dissolve underneath the paint.
I used a heat gun this summer. It did a pretty neat effect. It really smoothed
yeah.
a lot out. It was it had a lot more control to it.
A heat gun gives you a good rippled effect. Yeah, it's a smooth...
If you do it just right, like down in the lettering and stuff, it really smooths up a lot, too. Kind of a neat effect.
No. Running out of time. Okay, this is obviously not going to get finished. Okay. Now I'll take a second color and just streak it. And it'll give a marbleized effect to it. And I can go right across all the lettering. And if I want to, I can even go back with black again. Now this is nowhere near finished, but you can see the effect that you're going to get doing that. And I'm doing it wet paint on top of wet paint. So you can see the blending of the two grays and the blending and shadowing of the black. Okay. Where if I waited for a layer to dry and I did black over that, it's going to be a solid black line laying on top of the gray. But that's basically an incomplete tombstone. questions? I'm sorry? If I wanted to seal it in any way, I would just use a polyurethane, use an outdoor water-based polyurethane. There are other products to seal it. I mean, if you want to put a hard shell over it, like to keep it from getting damaged, you could use spackling paste, joint compound. They're relatively inexpensive. We have a product called foam coat that is really a hard shell. I mean, it's outdoor paint. It's going to weather. There's, yeah, your house weathers. But yeah, you may need to repaint it down the road. Yeah. If you're like me, your house needs painting every 10 years, and I'm going on 15. Yeah. These are just examples. We did two tombstones. The wooden tombstone. Same technique. Okay. If you wanted to do coffins, doors, shutters, anything, you could do it out of styrofoam and have that wood effect. And if you imagine a 6-foot coffin done with styrofoam instead of plywood. Yeah.
What do you use for the adhesive to get the pieces?
So for adhesive? Okay, I use two types of glue. I either use a spray adhesive, like 3M, Elmer's, Design Master. They all make a spray adhesive. Make sure when you read the application that among the applications, foam is okay. Not all spray adhesives are. And first time I found that out, I used a 3M product, worked great, used it up, went back to buy more, sprayed what I was doing with, and watched it dissolve. And it was a 3M product. I just thought it was all the same. Wasn't. 3M makes different products.
What tool do you suggest if you want to go do a cutout in the thing, like if you're doing a tombstone with a hole?
The knife. The knife is a very precise cutter. The other glue I would use, if I can't use a spray adhesive, is one that Hotwire makes. And it's called Foam Fusion. And the reason why, you can use any kind of water-based glue. You can use Elmer's glue, wood glue, liquid nails, Gorilla glue. They'll all glue styrofoam and they're all safe, as long as it's a water-based glue. The problem with most paste glues is that they glue hard or they glue gummy. And if you're gluing cut pieces, you're okay. If you're gluing pieces and then want to cut them after they're glued, you're going to have problems cutting them. The Foam Fusion that Hotwire sells is a glue that you can glue and then cut through. Okay. So either use a spray adhesive because you can cut through it, or I use Foam Fusion because you can cut through it. Okay, here's an example of stone. And this was tinted at the bottom with green to give it a moss look, but using the same type tint that I used with the black, that I showed with the black. And doing with brick. And the brick again was painted. And this was all done with two shades of red. Okay, just mixing the shades as I was going along. Take a little bit of one color, a little bit of another, and just keep on moving. Some of the clay that I was using had too much of a new look to it, so I sprayed the entire thing with the black tint. And it gives it more of like a Philadelphia house. That's 100%. I grew up in Philadelphia. I know what a Philadelphia house looks like. But again, whether you're doing a tombstone or you're doing anything larger, the techniques are the same.
Pardon me? What do you use to hold on your tombstone?
I would take like the engraving tool, which is the blunt tool. I'll bore a hole, two holes, and use a skewer. Put the skewer in backwards so that the point is down. If it's something bigger, I just make that hole a little bit bigger, and I'd use a wooden dowel or even a metal rod. You know, just insert that in the bottom and then stick it in your yard. If this was your tombstone, it doesn't have to go that deep.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, you're just taking the engraving tool, and if you just bury that, that's fine. You know, you don't have to go that far.
Now, last time I saw your stuff, you had something that would make it look like concrete.
That's a foam coat. Okay. That's one of the foam coats. There's two types. There's an interior that can be real smooth. And there's an exterior that actually has a little bit of concrete. And you can brush it on or trowel it on, and depending on technique and how thick or thin you mix it, you get a lot of different effects.
You have any of that today?
I have it downstairs. In fact, I have a cross downstairs that was done with that, a Celtic cross. that was covered with the exterior to give it a real rough look.
What make of fools do you like when you get into this back?
I find the use for all of them. If you say, if you only wanted to do tombstones, if you only wanted to do a stone tombstone, these are the two tools that you'd use the most. Okay, an engraving tool, obviously, and a cutting tool. If you're doing wood, then you have a use for the knife. Okay, if you're doing a lot of wide engraving, I didn't bring the tool up here, but there's the freehand router tool. That you remove large pieces of product and or do like the grout line in here was done with that tool.
Do you guys have anything new coming up?
New tools?
Yeah.
We have some new tools downstairs.
Okay.
Grout lines and the grip, was that done using a straight edge or a freehand?
I'm sorry?
The grout lines and the grip, was that freehand or was that done using
a straight edge? No way that was done freehand. That was done freehand. No, what I did was take a straight edge and the sled guide and run the sled guide next to the straight edge and just pulled that sled guide along the straight edge. Yeah, no way. There's no left-hander that could draw a straight line. Okay? I thank you, and I hope that was informative.